I get your point.
Anyway, hello. So my name is Christopher Gabriel. I am interviewing Edith. I cannot pronounce her last name.
You have to learn to pronounce it.
How do I do it?
Nayak.
Nayak.
Yeah.
Okay. It is the 26th of October. We are in Edith's little school-provided apartment.
2005.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Okay, and today we are talking about the spiritual essence of the Inupiaq people.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not sure where to begin. So, do you want to just start?
I think everything is spiritually motivated. Earlier, I talked about the spiritual essence of the whale. I remember when our crew, Roy Nayak, was the captain, and he caught a whale, and everybody was so happy. But it got lost under the ice and came back up on the third day. Mm-hmm. The whale rose on the third day, and actually that was the delicacy of the elders, was to avatai eunuch, they call it avatai eunuch. That means, you know, we cannot eat the meat, only the maktak. We could boil the maktak and eat it, or freeze it in the future and eat it, and it's good. It's good. We do not eat the meat, but just the maktak. So mom was happy, everybody was happy. They put a flag on top of the house and invited everybody to come and eat it, especially the elders. They really enjoyed that. And mom was baking and really enjoying. So after that, she passed away May 12th. And then after she passed away, that same spring, that same summer, my son, my first grandchild, was born 18 days after our mom died. And of course, we have to name him after our mom. My aunt called me from Kakto region and told me that not in so much as I have to, but it was an honor for me to get a call from my aunt and say, name him Rikakha. And so I did. And our naming procedure has no gender. So my first grandchild was named after our mom, which her name was Ivekakrak. And so, and life goes on. I was the happiest grandmother, my first grandchild. It was such a beautiful experience. Nothing can ever beat anything like that. I thought having children was, you know, wonderful, but once you have a grandchild, it just sticks to your heart. And I couldn't stop going over there and to go see the baby, my first grandchild. So the following summer, because this is all spiritually motivated, my grandchild was born 18 days after mom passed away, which was May 30. So the following summer, we had no cause for grieving, because my grandson was, his birthday was on Memorial, which usually we remember our loved ones who passed on, the grieving process. But it was a joyful day because that was his first birthday. So we were happy and enjoying the first birthday of my first grandchild, and And then they went out whaling, and they, our crew got a whale. Roy Nahyap, my youngest brother's crew, that's a family crew. We consider it a family crew. So the Nahyap's crew, Akuchuk's crew, which we call Akuchuk, he was named after our grandfather, Akuchuk. That's a crew, Akuchuk crew. So we got a whale, a brand new whale, which didn't go under. It was fresh, it was soft, and it was wonderful. It was just the best ever. And we got to feed everybody on Mother's Day. Isn't that a...
That is really cool.
Yeah, isn't that such a beautiful, awesome, spiritual... I get so like, wow, God.
Yeah.
You know. So we got to meet, and I mean, we got to feed everybody on Mother's Day. Oh my God. Celebration, another celebration. No cause for grief. And it was definitely a spiritual essence of our culture. Everything is so spiritually connected. The whale gives itself to the people. Like when it always seems to happen when somebody loses a loved one, then they catch a whale, and that's to uplift their spirit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're crying, and it's okay, it's a cause for celebration of that person's life. It's not the end. It's a celebration. So the Inupiaqs have been spiritual even way before the ministries came. We respected the animals, we respected the land, we respected the elders, the children, people around us. And we give to the poor. We did that in our culture. When you catch your first, if you were a child and you caught your first, whatever, caribou, seal, walrus, you're supposed to give it all to the elders. And they still do that to this day. And I remember my nephew, he was like, I don't know how old he was, maybe 8 years old, 6 or 8 years old. And he caught his first little teeny bird. I remember we used to eat those when we were small. Our mom knew how to net. She taught us how to make a net to capture the birds that we eat. Anyway, my nephew just got his first kill, I think that was his first kill. And it was such an honor. He came over to my house, which I wasn't even an elder then. I was only like maybe 50 years old, 49 years old. He came over and said, "Anna, Auntie, I want to give this to you." And I said, "Oh, what an honor!" And I prepared it the way I grew up, the way I knew how when I was growing up, how to prepare it and cook it and boil it, whatever. And so I did that, and guess what happened? When I was starting to eat it, I said, "Oh, the little bird." My first experience of being an elder, and it shows that I have compassion, you know. We ate those when we were small.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that you can do to survive in anywhere. You know, if you're out there hungry somewhere in the future, that's one of the things that we subsist on. I mean, we ate whatever we caught. Mm-hmm. But being young, you know, I just couldn't eat it. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of that little teeny bird, you know, and it's a funny story, but you know, the Eskimos were made to subsist on whatever was on our land, mm-hmm. the caribou, the ptarmigan, which is a bird, and eider ducks and squirrels and whatever was on the land, whatever we caught, that's what we ate. And even long time ago, it has been known that they did eat the owl too, a long time ago, mm-hmm. and even the seagull, a long time ago. Those we ate as Inupiaq, and then the sea, which was very good, because it's all unsaturated. Whatever comes from the ocean is all unsaturated. The walrus, the seal, the whale, even the clams, mm-hmm. that comes out from the walrus belly. Oh man, those are delicious. You clean them up and you put them in seal oil and right. Oh, that's the best meal ever. And those are the things that we love eating. And the way that they prepare the food, like the stomach of the caribou, you put liver inside it and you store it in the ground and keep it there for a while, and it's, oh man, that's delicious. Because we as Eskimos were made to eat. In the dictionary were people that eat raw meat. And that's what we are. We eat raw meat. And we were the healthiest, most agile people. Our teeth were perfect, even before we knew they were dentists. No sugar, no candy, no coffee before all that stuff came around. And then the missionaries came. White man came through ships and brought the sugar, coffee, candy, pop. That's when our diet started twinkling, like diabetes and high blood pressure and obesity. And wherefore, before we had a lot of activity of cutting wood, chopping wood, chopping ice, going out to the land by foot sometimes to go get caribou, go down to the ice by foot to go get seal. And the women, when the man comes in with a seal, they cut it up, and there was a lot of activity, constant activity. No couch potato type of, you know, mm-hmm. we have become that. And we're so used to the skidoos and the four-wheelers and the cars, and we wonder what happened. And that's what happened. We need to exercise. We need to do the things that we did a long time ago. And I want to let the young people know that you have to learn the old ways of life. How did we survive without electricity? How did we survive without gas? How did we survive without the cars, without the skidoo, without the four-wheeler? We survived by raising dogs. We had a dog team. And we had the seal oil to maintain our warmth in the home. You have to learn to make the homemade harpoon from ivory or flint or whatever you can find out there to make your own harpoon to get your seal. And how do you get caribou? They herded reindeer a long time ago. They did. They herded.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
My dad was one of them. That was it in the early 1800s, I think. But like in the 1700s, that's how our people survived. And they found out that our sod house was the most energy efficient house that you can build.
Hmm.
It's made out of the land, out of the sod, you know, from the ground. During summertime you piece out these grounds and shape them into a house. Piece by piece, like blocks of sod, blocks of ground, you know. You make them into pieces where you could put them together, and that's how you make.
Mm-hmm.
You make a sod house, and it had been considered the most energy efficient house that anybody can build, because it was solid and warm and a long time ago they used to have an opening, a door on top of the house.
Mm-hmm. For the smoke to go out?
No, for people to come and go.
Oh, out of the top? Oh, really? That's interesting.
Because they didn't have any, because, you know, there's snow, it snows up, whatever, the snow gets. But snow gets high, whatever, and common sense, you make a door.
Up there.
Because I remember growing up in Cacto Ridge, and the houses were like built out of wood. This was when I was a little girl, in the 1950s. And the houses, you couldn't even see the houses because the snow was on top of them, and the only way you could find out whose house it was by the chimney, or the people would like make, the door would be down there, but it's, so they make doors opening from the inside like this so that they could shovel themselves out of that. No. So
wow.
Sometimes you would slide down and visit, you know, slide down to one of the houses. That was so wonderful. I enjoyed sliding down, like when the sun was coming up in February, and here we're making Valentine's cards, homemade Valentine's cards.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun is shining through the window, and it just, and you can go out, you're anxious to go out, because one of our games was whoever saw the sunshine first, whoever saw the setting sun first, was, good morning sunshine! That was beautiful memory. That's the spiritual essence of our culture. The beauty of the sunset. The beauty of the sunrise. That's a spiritual essence of our culture. And the animal comes to you, and I was just visiting my aunt just recently, and there's this man. He forced his daughter to marry into this family because the man was a good hunter. He wanted
mm-hmm.
a good hunter in his family. So she married him, and pretty soon she started expecting him from the hunt. You know, she started having feelings for him.
Right.
Started to love him, I think. And he died. He out in the ice, unfortunately. And he came from a poor family, but we don't consider that a poor family because he was a good hunter and he provided food for his family. That was the wealth of an Inupiaq family, was if a man could hunt good, that's a good, rich, wealthy family. So the father claimed the ice cellar, all the food from the man's family, because they were poor. They were considered poor. They didn't have any more hunters. They didn't have anybody to fend for them or to, like, cook. I mean, to hunt for them, for their food. And he put like he locked up the cellar, the ice cellar, from those people who originally were the owners of the ice cellar full of food, because that guy was hunting a lot. And this is true, this really happened. And so at night, somebody came over, one of my aunt's friends came over and said, "Come on, Elizabeth, come on, you gotta go see this, you gotta go see." It was dark. "You gotta come and see this." And so they went in, they came over there, and nothing but bugs all over the cellar.
Weird.
Lots of bugs just all over the cellar. And they said, you cannot eat the food that's been like that, you know. Lots of white bugs all over the cellar. They would be there during the night, and during the day they would be gone. So the moral of the story, the true story, is that you do not do that to poor people. You share food. That was a spiritual happening, like, to this day. We highly respect the fact that you do not do that to poor people. You share your food. Whatever you catch, you're supposed to give it out and not hoard it or be stingy about it. Otherwise, that's what happened to this person who was trying to hoard the food and be stingy, ended up losing everything. And they didn't use that cellar anymore because of that.
So, when you guys like get together and have celebrations and stuff, do you do like dances and stuff? Sorts of, like, I guess you could say rituals for honoring the spiritual world and the spiritual essence?
I think before, because the missionaries did away with that, the missionaries took away our dances and our songs.
All of them?
No.
Okay.
They didn't.
That would be so sad.
They didn't take it from our heart, from my spirit. The belief was that it was, I don't know, they considered it wrong for some reason in their religious. There's a difference between religion and spirituality. Religion is man-made. They make these man-made regulations and rules and whatnot, and we live by respecting, like I told you, by respecting others, elders, children, the land, the animals, respecting the poor, feeding them when they're hungry, giving to the poor, taking care of somebody who needs help. You know, if somebody comes and says, I need help, you have to help them out. You give, honestly. Because it's not yours, it's all in the... And even nowadays, there's a story my sister told me that she had just lost a friend, and she was so depressed and so, what do you call it, so sad about the death. She was grieving so much. She missed her friend so much. She couldn't dance. And so she went to the dance. She went to the Eskimo dance, just feeling so low. So, you know, we feel like that. Human beings feel like that. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so crucial that we keep up with the dances. And even though she was feeling depressed and low, all of a sudden she started feeling better, just listening to the drums and everybody dancing. And when she went down there and she started dancing, and she just like, her whole disposition changed. Her depression went away. And that's our spiritual, is this a spiritual healing process? Mm-hmm. Like we flail our hands up and up that way, and it's just thanking the spirit world, that whoever is up there that made this world, whoever made the animals for us to eat, whoever gave the world to itself, like whoever is in control is the supreme, the pure, the almighty, whatever. To us, he's the creator, he's the provider. We never had a name for that spirit, but we knew there was somebody more powerful, and that's where the dance is. Like the other day, the other night, when my brother James just went up there and danced his heart out, that's when the people like, ah! You know, the spirit is it's a healing process when you just like, oh my God, everybody's so happy, and it's just exhilarating, and you just could feel the spirit. Mm-hmm. And everybody has a spirit, a spiritual happening, like the blues or the football or whatever, you know, and it's when people are in touch with themselves and in harmony. And there is also the other side of the world where depression, domestic violence, and all that ugly stuff. We know that in this world. So feed the good side all the time. Be on the good side of life. That's where Janis Joplin, listen to your favorite music, whatever it is, the guy that does this, what's his name? He's so soulful. That guy.
Oh, is it Miles Davis? Is it an old jazz singer or a jazz player?
Any one of those.
Any one of them. Yeah,
any one of that, the person who just touches your soul and you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
Any one who has that ability to uplift your spirit, you know. So those are the healing things for us in our culture on the Eskimo dancing. The late Pete Sualek, I remember, he had always wanted to Eskimo dance after a funeral, after we put a person in the ground, and I said, okay, time to dance. That was to uplift their spirit, to let them know this. Mm-hmm. Life goes on. And we named, and they had that personality. We named the children mm-hmm. after whoever dies, and that's what I mean with my daughter, Bernice Martha Abiwara. The late Bernice Martha Abiwara, who passed away, had a gray cat, and then my daughter insisted that she had one. She said, no, we never had a cat before. I said, yes, Mom, I had a gray cat. She was named after the young 16-year-old niece that passed away. She had a gray cat. So what could be more spiritual than that, you know? So that's the spiritual essence of our culture, the connection.
So this may sound like a stupid question, but is it a sort of reincarnation? What, like you just described, like how there was the woman who had the gray cat, and then after she died, you named the daughter. You gave her mm-hmm. her name, and then she like thought she had a gray cat. And
mm-hmm.
was it like a reincarnation of the other woman's spirit
mm-hmm.
into?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Cool.
The continuation of that person. Like I was named after Kliaksuk, who was a very poor, nobody to take care of, nobody to hunt for her, only self, poor lady, Kliaksuk. I'm named after Kliaksuk, and my cousin Jane Snyder is named after Kliaksuk. Jane Thompson is named after Kliaksuk. So any Kliaksuk, we honor her by, I love lobster,
mm-hmm.
and anything that is of value. I mean, seems like we honor her name by being good to ourselves and loving good things, you know. That's honoring her.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Not so much as the whole personality of the person, but if you're named after a certain, like I'm named after Alak, I would embrace the grandchild of that person. I knew Alak. My grandfather's sister, Alak.
Mm-hmm.
But I was named probably after my dad's real name, Alak. But I grew up with this lady, and there is a connection. I have a more closeness to the Alak that I knew, who was my grandfather's sister, who was the grandmother of this family, and I embraced them. And that's the only way I don't call him Nate, I call him High Grandson, in Inuka. Yeah, in Inuka. And also I'm named after Sidon, Edith Sidon, who was the grandmother of this Aliak. And I'm very close. I consider myself a grandmother, and I embrace them, and there's that soul connection. Spiritual connection to that family too.
Mm-hmm.
So Alak, Sila, and Ayahko, I know, you know, I know who I'm connected to that family.
Mm.
So there's a connection. It's all, and they recognize that. We know, I know it, she knows it, I know it, he knows it, you know that. that connection.
That is very cool.
Yeah, that is the spiritual essence of our culture. And I notice it in the Yupik culture too. This lady is so wonderful.
Esther?
In her dances. She's a student, and I don't know her name, but she's so wonderful. And I said, I bet you were named after a great dancer. And she said, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, they have that gift from their namesake. So in everything that we do as impacts, it's spiritually motivated. When I first started sewing, I could feel the spirit of my mom and the other women who used to sew before when I needed help in something like that. In sewing, I sense their closeness and their angels, their spirit. Angels come and help me with my sewing. I pray, I meditate before I sew. I'm pretty sure, and I know for a fact that I'm not the only one. There's a lot of women who do that, who pray first. And that's a meditation for us. I love to sew. That's when I just enjoy the essence of making a inner attire, parka, and in anything, in everything that we do it spiritually. And we love to sing. We have our respective churches and we sing. But it's a matter of balance. You know, you don't go to this way over there where you're totally immersed in that religion. You don't do that. You have to be balanced. You have to dance. You have to hunt. You have to sew, you have to do the things that you love to do to uplift your spirit, you know. Because, like I said, religion is in a box. It's man-made. They have regulations, they have rules. You cannot Eskimo dance, you cannot smoke, you cannot do this, you can, you know, there's a lot of rules in religion. It seems like they muffle or snuff out the spirit of a person when they do that. They control.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that they do, is know how to control people. And that's not good. Because we know Georgetown, we know what happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those kind of religions, it's scary. Never get involved in people like that. You have to have that common sense, you know. You're your own person. You respect yourself and the freedom to learn. You're young. Your mind is like a computer, and it's just the essence of learning the different cultures and different ways of life. like you're from Connecticut and you're finally learning the real people.
Mm-hmm. Finally.
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 Knowing the lives of the people that you don't even know, mm-hmm. way up there in the north. So, traveling is education. Traveling is very educational. Don't get locked in to just your little Connecticut way of life.
No, never.
That's good. That's good.
Never.
Yeah, that's good. Because it's scary sometimes, you know, when you go out. But the fear is gone when you just have this, like, the hunger to learn. You know, I said, wow, the opportunity, this is the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a perfect place to learn all you ever want to learn, especially about the Inupiaq and the Yupiaq up here.
Yes.
So, whatever you pursue, do it in a healthy way. Respect the people. There's going to be people who will be dominant, who's going to try and control you and be sure and maintain your health, your mental health. Don't let them control your actions, you know? Some people are very angry, some people are very controlling, some people are like that, you know? And you just feel like tearing them off, and you cannot go into their anger. You just have to, okay, just go and roll up that anger and stuff and throw it back at them. Don't let anybody manipulate you or control you in that manner. You have the ability to be healthy mentally. Be with healthy people. Learn as much as you can. Because children learn what they live. Thank God we had parents. He was a prominent polar bear hunter. He loved children. He never ever struck a child. Mom was an Eskimo comedian. She loves to laugh. She loves to make people laugh. And our grandfather was a lay preacher. A couple of our siblings are reverends. One is retired, the other one still active in the church. We all have different personalities. Unconditional love, that's very essential in living in this world nowadays. You can't be prejudiced. Like our dad said, we have two eyes, a nose, and a mouth. We don't see color. The family, our family, don't see color. So all of us have two eyes, a nose, and a mouth, and we have the same bodily functions. And we do.
It's true.
Yeah. So we need to learn to get along in this world now. You know, 2005. We have to learn to get along and to resolve our problems, our conflicts. And it's not all wealth and acquiring stuff. you know, materialistic stuff. It's what up here that counts, what you learn, the knowledge that you are acquiring. It's the most wealthiest thing that you have is what's up here, what you know. Nobody can take that away from you.
That's true.
Yeah. The knowledge that you have acquired, and continue to pursue your education as far as you want to go. You have that ability. Because I know of a person who is a doctor, a lawyer, and a pilot all rolled in one.
Wow.
I thought, whoa! If he can do that, you can do that.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
That is really cool.
Coolest. That is just so awesome. He pursued that and he did it. So just as long as you enjoy what you're learning, what you want to do in your life, has to be something that just, good for your self-esteem. Find something that you really want to do and enjoy doing, and not consider it as work, you know, consider it as just something that you love to do.
Well, we should probably cut this off now then, since we have a pause.